I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend. Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hello, boys, girls, whoever you are, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Waypoint UK podcast, episode 9, I think. I'm going to say 9. I usually have it written down on my piece of paper, but I didn't today, because why not? It's a fun thing to just make it up as you're going along. My name is Mike Diver. I'm joined today for the podcast, the bi-weekly podcast, by Saim Ahmed, calling in from far away. Hey, dude.
Hey, dude, I'm far away. I'm in Sheffield at the moment, actually.
Which, so. I mean, in a global sense, that's not that far away. But for you and I, it's a long way. Yeah. Why aren't you here?
I'm not here because UK trains are awful, basically.
That's all we need to know. That's all we need to know. They're terrible. I'm glad Saim's called in because he knows a lot about games that we're going to talk about. Which is useful because I'm not sure that I necessarily do. And beside me on a sofa that you can't see because this is not a visual medium is Kate Gray. What's up, yo?
What's up?
What's up, yo?
Many things are up.
Many things are up. You've just come back from Edinburgh.
I have. I was in Edinburgh. That's even further away than Sheffield.
It is.
I'm coming up very quiet on this podcast. I wonder if I should talk louder.
No, you're fine. You're
good.
Fine.
Well, sorry, everyone. Yeah.
If there's occasional blips or peaks or things like that, just forgive us.
Yeah,
we're
sorry.
Not audio experts.
I am. I've got a degree in... I can't
make things
keep that up.
Up.
I'm sorry.
You can't just
Kate
sit
Gary,
there.
PhD in stereophonics.
I didn't say a PhD, and also stereophonics are a bad band. If my mum's listening to this, she's going to be very upset. She's seen them like 6 times.
Was your mum into the stereophonics?
Oh, she's very into the stereophonics.
Mate, like, how old is your
mum? Don't ask how old my mother is.
Is that improper?
Yes, that's very rude. And I don't think she would like that.
Stereophonics were a band of my generation.
Well, she's my mum.
Yeah.
Oh, that was... Yeah, that made it sound like I was going, well, you're old.
I am old. Oh,
but
hey,
my mum's
yeah,
not
yeah,
old. Yeah, oh, I'm digging
this is
a
what
hole.
Happens. Anyway, before we go any further, I want to throw out a spoiler warning for a very good reason, because we're going to talk about a bunch of games that have been out a little while.
A very little while.
Some of them are very little while, others a few more of a while. The main reason being that I'm quite keen to explore some of the themes and some of the story beats. And I just want to put it out there right now. Basically, the whole thrust of this podcast, this episode of the Waypoint UK podcast, recorded at Vice in London, is that, you know, a while ago on Waypoint, we had Patrick write a piece about Japanese games, you know, having a great start to the year. And back then it was all talk about Yakuza 0, Resident Evil 7, and a little bit of Gravity Rush 2, which has kind of got lost in the flood a little bit.
Yeah, so did Gravity Rush 1.
Yeah.
I think people like that it's a cult.
But of course, since then there's been Nier Automata, the small matter of Persona 5, and the even smaller matter of Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, it's weird calling that a JRPG, because it's not quite like the others, is it?
Is it indeed? I mean, it's a Japanese role-playing game, right?
I mean, technically.
I guess so.
Yeah. Basically, the point is to look at some of these cool Japanese games that have been out and have a little chat about them. I thought that'd be a cool thing to do, given that Persona 5 has been out a few days, about a week or so.
Several days.
A few days, yeah. I mean, that's partially why you're... I mean, we love you anyway, Saim, but I mean, a good reason why you're here, because I know that you've stacked a whole bunch of hours into Persona 5.
Before coming onto this, I spent all day sitting in front of a television with my waifu, so, you know, it's all good.
Cool. How many hours have you done?
About 80 so far.
Psh, nothing.
See, well, you say that's nothing.
I've done 250 on Animal Crossing, mate. Talk to me
if
when
only
you're
that was
that
the subject
number.
Of this podcast.
It's a Japanese game, Mike.
Well, it is.
You play a role in Animal Crossing?
Yes. The
Some
mayor.
Would argue.
You play the mayor.
That's quite important.
Someone's got to do it.
Someone has got to do it. So, just to interrupt this briefly, Kate, you've got a drink here. What the hell is
it's
that?
It's bubble tea. It's got bubbles in it.
You've got bubble tea.
It's bubble tea.
Simon, what have you got a drink going on there, mate?
Oh, no. I've got a dry throat, but no drink.
Oh, you start a podcast tea. With a dry throat. You've done wrong.
You promised me tea and beer.
Listen,
what kind of mixture is that?
This is because even though we're recording this on a Thursday, mm-hmm. which we are, like when this goes live on the 20th of April, we actually recorded it a week before, which is obviously the Thursday before Easter. We were meant to have beer Friday on a Thursday, but that fridge got stripped inside 10 minutes. I went over 10 minutes after they announced that there was beers in the fridge. And there were none left. And it's my birthday. Can you believe that?
That's a tragedy.
Nobody saved me a beer. So I went to the pub anyway. So we've dealt with that. We've got over the no beer hurdle quite
you
well.
Have.
I have. This will go very well. Hey, we're 5 minutes into the podcast. We haven't even started on the fact that I want Sam to talk to me for a long time about Persona 5.
You mentioned Persona 5. Let's get into it.
Let's dig into Persona 5. Persona 5 came out over here on April the 4th, I want to say, in the West, like worldwide, wasn't it?
Yeah, something like that. Or the 3rd. Yeah. It had like an English dub and Japanese dub as well on the disc, but it's been out for a while in Japan.
Oh,
now,
yeah, like ages,
like
yeah.
Eight months or so.
Yeah. Long enough for lots of like playthroughs and pictures to be on the internet, but apparently we can't share those things. Maybe we'll talk about that.
Not at all. It's a crime. Like the Atlas
it's
police will come and get you.
They will hunt you down, or just like you know, look at your IP address and have a word. But no, but I you know, we'll talk about that in a minute. But On a kind of gameplay front here, we got a game, Persona 5. The clue is in the 5. It's not exactly the fifth Persona game at all. But I mean, how does this feel, mate? I mean, I look at you as a bit of an expert on these things. How does it feel 80 hours in versus previous Persona games?
Have you found the story yet?
Well, hey, careful now. I should point out I'm about 18, 19 hours into it, and that's just about getting into the second quote-unquote dungeon. Like, this is a huge game, right?
Okay, yeah. So I'm into, like, just the start of the fifth dungeon now. So it's been a while. It's been a ride. And because... basically, my relationship with Persona games started with Persona 3, which I played once and I thought was cool. Played 4 and I was like, oh my god, this is the best thing ever. And then played it until I'd literally done everything in the game. So for me, it's still early doors on 5.
Which is incredible to say after 80 hours, dude.
I know, right? But here we are. So far, it's amazing to see how they've modernized on the systems in the game. So stuff like social links or confidants. The way they break up time management and just the whole style of it really is kind of impressive to see how they've sort of leveled up on such a way in 8 years. It did take them, so you know, it's been a while.
Was that 8 years between 4 and 5 then, is it? Because there were things in between, right? When you had the Persona 3 portable, obviously the golden port of Persona 4, so it's not this team's been doing nothing.
Yeah, they literally remade every Persona game and then made Catherine and then made Persona 5.
Which, from what I understand, Persona 5 had to almost be remade because Sony went and introduced the PS4.
Well, I interviewed Mr. Hoshino, the director of Persona 5.
Katsuri
and
Hoshino.
He was like, I'm just dropping that in there.
and available on Waypoint, that interview.
As it so happens. No, but what he said was that they were like chugging along in development and then PS4 came along and was like, oh, we should do that. So... you've seen the UI in Persona 5 is all super stylish and really dynamic. And of course, if you're working to the PS3, then you're probably working to a different resolution than, you know, the PS4 is going to run at. So, like, in my head, they're probably going to run at 720 on PS3 and 1080 on the PS4. And I don't know if you've tried to emulate an old game before in HD, but sometimes the UI elements are all messed up. So that's probably what would have happened if they didn't redo right. all those assets.
Yeah, because he talked a lot about, like, basically going back to the drawing board on a lot of the, like you say, the art stuff, yeah. you know, the stuff they'd already made, which I think probably extends to the main characters and stuff.
Yeah, well, you think it would, right? I mean, like, in terms of, like, character portraits, and there's just so many 2D UI elements layered on top of the 3D. It's kind of incredible to see.
It's a hella stylish game. Have you been playing at all, Kate?
Persona 5, no.
Then you are out of this conversation.
I'm nomadic, you see.
Nomadic.
Which basically means I don't have a TV. So I'm only playing Switch and 3DS at the moment.
I see.
I don't want to play Persona 5 on a PS4 because I want to play it on my Vita.
Oh, but don't. I can't. Do we go there?
Okay.
Go.
Are we going there?
I mean, it's a valid point though.
If it comes to the Switch, I'll play
on that. The 18 odd hours that I've put into Persona 5 now would be a lot more if it was portable. That's very true. You know, 70 hours on Golden on the Vita in a heartbeat, not a problem. In that same space of time, probably is probably this 18 odd hours. I mean, do you think Sony have missed a trick by not making it a Vita game? I don't know, because it was originally being made for the PS3, so presumably they could make it work on Vita. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it was released on PS3 as well.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Yeah.
So, like, that exists on that sort of hardware. So, like, I find it quite a unique perspective that you guys have, because my first Persona was on a console.
Right.
So I've always viewed it as a console series and not as a portable thing until, like, the Golden, the remakes came along.
Do you play, like, portable, so though, as well, yeah? Like, Persona 3 portable?
A Persona 3 portable, yeah, Persona 4 Golden, and the 2 remakes and the 1 remake as well. But yeah, I think it's quite interesting, because I've always viewed it as, like, a session game. So, like, I will sit down and I will dedicate, like, 4 hours to playing this. Like, I don't find it, I'm going to pick this up, I'm going to do a day, I'm going to turn it off, and I'm going to go on my way. I think, like, something like Zelda is really good for that, but not for Sony.
Yeah, I mean, Zelda has the advantage of saving anywhere, as in the new Zelda.
Yeah.
Which is beautiful. And you're absolutely right about Persona 5, actually. I was playing it again this morning, knowing that my train was due and having get to a point where I was like, I need this whole scene to stop so I can press my options button and save it. yeah, but we got there in the end and just about made it up. But I mean, you know, Persona 5, it's gone down spectacularly well. Obviously, the first review that came out of the UK was Official PlayStation Magazine, which I think was Jen Simpkins wrote. Yeah, 10 out of 10. That's a bold score, isn't it? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, this kind of ties into the whole fact that, like, you know, we've got these Japanese games out at the start of this year that are just racing up the Metacritic aggregates or whatever. I mean, as someone who is a big Persona fan, say, I mean, can you see enough qualities in 5 to say, yeah, this is, I don't know, is it the best of the bunch yet? Are you still finding your way? I mean, you know, you say you're 8 hours in, but you haven't really got a total feel for it yet. I mean,
yeah.
I'm guessing you're waiting to see what the next 80 hours bring.
I guess so. I mean, for those scores, I think are completely justified, because it is that sort of caliber game, in the way that it does streamline a lot of things about Japanese RPGs and just makes them a lot easier. So I really love Xenoblade Chronicles X from a few years ago. And but the problem was that it was just littered with fetch quests for some reason. And
the problem was
really
it was on the Wii U.
Well, hey now.
Hey,
let's
woo.
Not do this. Yeah. But no, it was littered with fetch quests, and it was really awful to play. Like, like, I love the world and everything else around it, but when it came to, like, some of the moment-to-moment stuff, it was really frustrating. And Persona 5, I feel, cuts a lot of the fat out of that experience, because a lot of JRPGs are always hung up with tradition and doing X, Y, and Z in this way, or talking to every NPC in a town before the quest pops, and stuff like that, which is really annoying. So I feel that this is probably one of the only JRPG series to have done this, like, in such a way.
Yeah, there is a stream. I must admit, there is a streamlining to the way the Persona is presented, and this extends to 4, and I played a bit of 3 as well. That you don't get even in the new Zelda. You talk about walking around and seeing like everyone in a particular village. That is kind of how the new Zelda works. If you want to work your way beyond the main destroy Ganon aspect of it, you know, you have to see everyone in a village, and sometimes at particular times in that village, you know, and you have no idea that's going to happen until you just happen to chance upon it. So I do appreciate the fact that, you know, Persona 5 keeps moving. The downside to that for me is that, like, I want to do shit like, you know, go out into town. Like, it's obviously set in Tokyo, in the big city. I want to go out, like, oh, you've just got back from being at school or doing this or hanging out with a Ryuji or someone, you know, is that his name?
He's Ryuji. Awful. I don't like him at all.
Well, maybe we'll get onto characters in a minute, you know. And then your little cat friend Morgana's like, oh no, I think you're too tired. Maybe you should go to bed. And I'm like, fuck you, man. Like, I want to go out into Shibuya and like go play some, like, I don't know, hang out in the arcade or like, you know.
You just want to go out on town, Mike. You're ready to
I just want to go out. This is me today. Totally, absolutely me today. But I mean, it is streamlined. Do you feel it funnels you a little bit towards what it wants you to do? Obviously, when you hit the dungeons, you know, the kind of castles or obviously the first, well, did I put the spoiler warning in at the top of this podcast?
Did I?
I did say I was going to spoil shit. Spoiler warning. You know, the first dungeon, quote unquote, in Persona 5 is the castle, right? Is the PE teacher's castle. And then after that, you get the museum. And they're cool and everything, but what was I saying?
I don't know. I ran away.
But the stream, basically, it points you towards them, doesn't it? You don't have to like walk around. You know, you're not waiting for a queue or whatever. Like, that just lands in your lap, and I think, like that.
Yeah, part of that's, I think, because of the way the days are structured and how it works is that there's always this forward sense of momentum when playing a Persona game. Is that you're always going to have that front, like, okay, my day is segmented up, like. And I, like, just from playing 8 hours of it, it actually segments it into, like, your calendar into 3 different things. Like, so, like, when you're in a dungeon, I'll dedicate a few days to be in a dungeon. And then there's a space of free time where you have, like, what, 21 days to finish it. And usually that's all cleared up for your schedule, so you can do whatever in that time.
Yeah.
And then after that time's up, then it sort of runs you on a linear path. So I think that the tracks that it goes on changes over time, but it's about identifying that. And that can be frustrating for, like, for a lot of people.
Yeah. It's not great at explaining itself, is it, necessarily? No. Like, it does tell you in that first castle that, like, you've only got this many days to complete it, but you have no idea how big that is.
Yeah.
You know, and obviously you know that you want to do the extra stuff. You know, if you go into Persona 5, having played any other previous Persona game, you know you want to form these bonds with the other characters. You know, you need to study, you need to raise your, you know, you need to be attractive to the opposite sex, sadly. Or maybe positively, I don't know, but you know, that is a factor of these games. You know, you have kind of have to go down that line. And so to have to do these dungeons when you don't know how big they are, because I'm in the museum at the moment and it's like, well, I'm just in the foyer. Basically, who knows what's to come in this? You know, you have no idea, and it just throws that in you. You have, like, you know, like you're saying, like 14 days or whatever to finish this, 7 days to finish this. Well, can I spare a day to hang out with Anne for a bit, like, or do I have to press on and do this? You know, there is a little bit of,
yeah,
you know,
guesswork.
Yes, guesswork. Yeah. Absolutely, which is kind of the stress element of this game, which is maybe why I don't see it as a perfect 10 out of 10 so far. But but I don't know. Speaking of Anne, though, I mean, you kind of I mentioned Ryuji there. Ryuji, I'm sure that's his name. Ryuji, who's kind of the first secondary supporting character that you get in the game, and then Anne comes afterwards, dressed completely ridiculously. But maybe talk about that in a second. But I mean, how do you find the characters and the story on this one versus other ones? Because a lot of people have said, and I've even got some people who've emailed in and stuff, saying they're not connecting with the characters on Persona 5 as much as they did on Persona 4.
I'm finding the same thing. So out of all the cast of characters in Persona 4, I love a lot of them. So, like, Yosuke, I don't love Yosuke. That's take that off the record immediately.
On 4? No, he's lovable. He's lovable, though.
Oh. Yeah, well, Yosuke is an idiot, and a lot of people hate him. But in comparison to the other sort of bro character, which is Ryuji, Ryuji's just kind of insufferable. But the other characters that you do unlock in the game as time goes on are really interesting. So for me, that's why I'm still undecided on the game, is because I think that with this wider scope of all of Tokyo, instead of your little idyllic town of Inaba, where you get to intimately know this small, close-knit group of
like
friends.
Like, you literally know the woman who sells you seeds.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. You know, there's the mad cat lady at the end of the road. Like,
yeah. So there's that sort of element that's lost to it. So there's a real romantic quality about Persona 4, like a timeless sort of element to it. It's like, oh, you're in this idyllic Japanese countryside town and this is a murder mystery. Here we go. Persona 5.
That's not very idyllic if things keep getting murdered, but
they do stop getting murdered after a while.
Oh, yeah. But you wouldn't say that living in Midsummer was quite nice.
No, that's a very UK reference.
It's the UK podcast, all right? Strap
other people
in.
People listen
UK
to it.
Podcast, all right.
I'm going to be talking about.
Shall
biscuits.
We all talk like.
Hello.
Hello.
What accent is this? I don't know.
Oh, sorry, boy.
Back to JRPGs.
Anyway, so Persona 5's characters aren't really resonating as much as Persona 4's are. And do you know what? Like, Matt Jones is, by the time this is out, Matt Jones might even have a piece on the site. I'm not sure, but we were talking about this recently and he was sort of saying like the way they're introduced is very, very different. Matt Jones is a writer and he also works at London's Loading Bar.
He's a good boy.
He's a very good boy. And he was saying, like, you know, obviously the way that Persona 4's characters were introduced, it's kind of like you know about them before they become part of your little clique. And the way that Ryuji and Anna are kind of thrown into the mix in this game is so sudden and you don't really know anything about them, and you're acknowledging them more through their rivals or the people that they're rebelling against rather than them themselves. You're learning about them more through the negatives and the positives, and I don't know whether that has an impact on how you relate to them, you know, as characters you want to carry forward.
I mean, yeah, I did have, like, because you can level up their social link afterwards, which is like hang out with them and spend some time. So I was like, okay, let's get to know who these people are. And what I found is that personally, for these like intro characters like Anne and Ryuji, they don't really go anywhere. Like nowhere special, nowhere that resonated as much as Chie wanting to train or Yosuke having some sort of weird crisis. Like there isn't an arc there, I feel, that is as whole as the cast of Persona 4, you know? And I think that's a shame in some ways.
Yeah. Is it more the case that obviously the team are more focused on developing the quote-unquote gameplay elements of it rather than the social kind of relatable character side of it? Because the way the Persona 5 plays, the way it's presented is incredible. It's genuinely awesome. Like it improves upon Persona 4 visually in nearly every aspect. Of course, you've got the PS4 to factor into that, but like you were saying, like just from the, I mean, you know, Persona has always been a game of menus, right? You're going to get like this menu, that prompt, everything comes up. It's like so many words to process.
Yeah.
But Persona 5 does really well with that. There's like this weird, like, just finishing a battle is more fun here than it was in Persona 4, like with the vibrancy of it, you know, but it's almost like they've gone all in on that and maybe forgotten to make I don't know. Like I said, I'm like, still relatively early doors, but you know.
Yeah, I do think that weakness is limited to the early characters, as you will find out, I'm sure, is that the later characters, I feel anyway, get a lot stronger than the characters were introduced to at the start of the game. Like they're really good. Like they go through real turmoil and hardship, and you go through that with them, and that's the value in there, you know. But coming back to the battle system, is what you said about it. It's so slick and really nice, and it comes back down to streamlining it. Like, what kind of turn-based JRPG finishes a battle in another 30 seconds? Well, you know, Persona 5 does now, I guess.
Yeah.
But I don't think story's taken a hit for gameplay necessarily. I think they've both sort of elevated each other somewhat equally, and they both lean on each other in interesting ways as well.
I'm vibing it. You haven't played it yet, though, Kate.
I haven't. I think.
Are you tempted because of the positive reception?
So, I mean, the theme of this podcast is very much, hey, look at all these billion hour games that are coming out like right now. Yeah. And to be honest, it puts me off. I am going to spend as long as I can playing Zelda. Like, I am dragging that game out. I've only done the main dungeons because the people I'm living with are like, you should do the dungeons. Yeah. I was like, fine. Because, you know, they're letting me live with them.
Yeah, so, though, right?
But I mean, with with Persona 5, I spent such a long time playing Persona 4, and I'm maybe 5 minutes away from the ending.
And of Persona 4?
Yeah, and I'm never going to finish.
Which ending?
Well, that's the point. Like, someone told me there's a very big decision at the end that you don't realize you're making. And was like, well, I'm just not going to make it then. And that way I never mess it up. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to mess it up because I haven't maxed out any of the social links.
I did mess it up to start with. I will say that. Persona 4, yeah. Because there's the bit, you can end in December, can't you? Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was distraught.
Oh God, I
worked it out and I carried on through till March or April. Anyway, yeah.
It was real depressing.
I put 60 to 80 hours into that game and I do not want my ending to be sour. Like, that just makes me feel like I've wasted my time. So I'm just not going to finish it.
Speaking of sour endings.
Yes.
Near Automata.
Near Automata.
Near Automata.
Yeah.
Which is another... Not quite as much of a commitment as Persona 5 or Zelda.
Yeah.
But another big, you know, Japanese RPG that we want to talk about a little bit. You've been playing this, right, Sam? Yeah?
Obviously. Yeah, I've finished it with all the main endings that matter.
Well, there you go. Okay. Well, I got ending K last night when I finally ate a mackerel.
Which one that is.
And it was just like, I was like, I saved it and I said to my wife, this could all go terribly wrong. And sure enough, that kills you. Don't eat a mackerel. I did say spoilers.
Ending, I got ending you. Like,
what is, do I dare ask?
I blew myself up on a space station.
Yeah. I watched this one the other night. Yeah. So you can self-destruct. You know, it tells you should install the self-destruct. And then if at any point you're like, well, I'm going to self-destruct, it's like, well done, you've died. And if you do it in front of a bunch of people, then they die as well.
Then you get,
yeah,
they die as well.
And you get this little thing where it's like, well, you blew up everyone, but it made some very pretty fireworks and you're like, oh my God, that is the right ending.
But
right?
Now
yeah,
that's
yeah,
the
yeah.
one. Yeah.
The end is not just near. It's in front of your face.
Yeah.
Let's transition then a little bit from Persona 5 to Nier. This is good that you're on it, Simon, because obviously you've spoken to the director of both of these games.
Yeah.
You know, anyone would think there was a reason for having you on it. Not that we don't like you anyway.
Okay.
You know, in particular, because you've been communicating with the people who actually make these games. I found Persona 5, you know, the first time you meet Anna and that dungeon with the PE teacher, and it's all very, it's quite in your face with the sex. And Nier Automata is, again, a little bit in your face with the sex.
There's an achievement for looking at a bum, right?
I think they took that out, didn't they?
Oh boy.
I heard that there was, and then I was listening to a different podcast. Might have been the one that Andy Hamilton, might have been Midnight Resistance.
Yeah.
And they were talking about Nia and they were saying, oh, they've taken that out, so you can't look up her skirt anymore.
Well,
you can
look
every
up
every time
her
she
skirt.
Runs, man.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it kind of flaps up.
You just don't get anything for it.
This is 2B, the Android 2B of Nier Automata. So again, Nier Automata is obviously a follow-up to Nier, which was a cult level at best PS3. Yeah. It was Xbox 360 as well, wasn't it?
So it was one of two releases for Nier. So there was one where Nier was a dad.
Yes.
And there was one Japan only where Nier was a brother.
It's the brother, is it? It's not a son or anything? Because that was young dude, wasn't it? We got old dude in the West.
Yeah.
But the knock on... This is very confusing. But the Nier Automata that we play today is based on the one ending of Nier, which is in itself based on one ending of Drakengard 3. Is that right?
No, it's a Drakengard 1 ending.
Drakengard 1 ending.
Okay. You idiot.
Yeah. There are lots of games.
I'm trying to pretend like I know all this. I have no idea what
Listen,
I like
this podcast is entirely pretending.
It's all right.
Don't lift the veil.
I've played a video game.
Oh, we're
game.
In trouble. But I mean, Nier Automata, I mean, I was listening, what was I listening to earlier on? I was listening to the Video Gamer podcast on the way into the most recent episode of that. And Colm on that, speaking to Alice and the rest of them, was saying that he genuinely thinks that Automata is a Game of the Year contender.
Oh, yeah.
And it's just so good, isn't it? Where did this come from? I mean, I played it last year at Gamescom a little bit. And I remember writing then, like, keep an eye on this bad boy.
Yeah, but, I remember when this got announced, I bashed out like an article immediately being like, here's why you should care about this game. It's going to be amazing. I made a vine, I distinctly remember, of me just clutching a copy of Vanquish and Bayonetta next to it and not comprehending what it was going to be.
I wish this was visual so everyone could have seen your face then, dude.
Yeah.
Like that was a real moment of like, you should really, seriously, this game, guys. It was so good. Just, I enjoyed it.
But that's how good it is.
It does
deliver on the promise of being the weirdness of Yoko Taro with the action of Platinum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the gameplay systems in between.
See, I usually hate combat in games, except in things like Bayonetta, where it's this fluid, weird,
where
leggy...
Where your clothes are your hair.
Kind of... Well, not specifically that, but you know, the combat in Bayonetta is all sort of like... It doesn't really make sense, but you have so much fun doing it. Near Automata, I can't pronounce it, is like that, because you can like chuck your sword. You can do some fancy ass moves.
You can't summon a guillotine, which you can do in Bayonetta.
Oh, Bayonetta's a bit more fancy than Nier is, but...
It's got more bells and whistles, hasn't it? But if you strip those bells and whistles away, like, I mean, what you get in Automata is a damn good Platinum combat system, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's got the Bayonetti spaghetti, that's for sure.
Bayonetti spaghetti.
I mean, I don't know if either of you have played the frankly terrible Platinum Legend of Korra game.
No.
Based on hit television series.
I played the Transformers one, which is nearly as bad.
It's similar.
So we give it a pass because it's got wheel jacket.
The game itself is rubbish, but the combat's all right. It's just repetitive. It's like they made like four moves and they were like, yeah, that'll do. If they were given more time to make it, it would have been like Bayonetta with bending. If you've watched The Last Airbender.
I don't know. Oh, that sort
that
of bending.
Sort of
I was
going to
say, because Bayonetta is quite flexible.
Well, that bending too.
As far as witches go.
Yeah, but Korra has a normal amount of leg, unlike Bayonetta.
Regular length legs.
Regular amount of leg, yeah. I like Bayonetta's legs.
I think 2B's legs are maybe... Are they exaggerated? I don't know.
Long.
She wears heels, doesn't she? How can she run with heels in the desert?
She's a robot.
Robot magic.
Know.
She's a robot is the answer for everything. Yeah. This is why it's so good. I remember seeing... something go around on Twitter about her weight, because obviously, you know, you put out a pretty girl as a character in a video game and she immediately becomes, you know, something that people want to draw things of. But like someone did put a thing around, but she weighs like something like 143 whatever it is, stone something. Oh, she's very heavy.
That's a lot. 143
Well, maybe pounds.
Stone.
What's 143 pounds in stone? I have no idea. Basically, she's very, very heavy because she is a robot. So that anyone wanted to be like, right. Oh, hey, I quite fancy 2B.
She'll crush you.
Having a go on that. She'll break your hip bones.
Which you might like if you're into that. If you're into being crushed, then...
Your pelvis will be all over the place.
Well, it depends what she's doing to you.
I mean, does she even have the... Anyway.
I don't know.
Well, she's got... let's not.
Let's not. We know that she can eat things, as explained by Ending K. But
extrapolating from that, she can
presumably
fuck.
Presumably, the things come out the other end.
But that's not what?
I don't know.
What are you doing? Let's move on.
No,
let's
but
move
she
on.
Has med...
She's got holes, is what you're trying to say.
I have no idea where we've got to.
She's got some kind of hole. Oh, my God.
So, Siam, you've hit a lot of endings. It's a game with multiple endings.
Yeah.
Yes.
Apparently.
But the multiple endings aggregate, I suppose, in a way. They layer on top of each other. It's not like, here is a game where you can finish it. It's not like Catherine, for instance, where like, you know, you get to the end of your game and that is your ending. Here you get ending one and ending two builds upon ending one, and ending three builds upon ending one and two, and so on and so forth. I mean, how do we feel about that design? And I mean, is it good? Do we like it? I mean, it leads you down some pretty dark philosophical paths, doesn't it, this game?
Yeah, I mean, the questions that it asks, I don't think many games of this scale have asked before. In terms of like a sort of philosophical thing, but I don't know enough about that to talk about it properly. But it's pretty smart, yeah.
What is humanity, basically? Almost,
whoa.
Like, you know,
yeah.
What are we when we're... What do we leave behind?
Ah, that's the
explosions and fish, apparently.
Explosions and fish. Fish are fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Moose. Moose are fine.
Moose are fine.
What other animals are there in Nier Automata?
Robots.
They're not animals. There are animals in it, though.
You are the animal.
Exactly.
Man,
right? Crikey.
Is an animal.
Crikey, how does that game pivot when you realize that you're killing nice robots that just want to have a fun time?
Like, I read Patrick's article that was off on the site. It was like, oh, father robot and mother robot, and they just want to have a good time and have fun. And they shoot, like, confetti at you. Like, you think going to be a meme, but it's confetti.
I was watching someone else, but we stumbled across a scene where all the robots were having sex.
Yeah, that's relatively early on. That's a real moment in the game.
Yeah, you're like, what did they do? Do I hit them? Should I stop? Should I join in? What do I do?
Unfortunately, join in is not an option.
No, and then a sexy naked boy comes out and he's all like, I'm a baby. You and you're like, what's happening?
Boy, but he hasn't got any.
Smooth.
How do you know? He's got no tackle. Yeah.
Is that what makes people sexy? No. No, it's not. It's personality and charisma, which he probably has.
Very beautifully haired Ken doll.
He's got some nice hair. Just because he's smooth down there doesn't mean he wouldn't be a good date. Okay.
Well, yeah, a good date maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, later on, you do horrifically murder one of these people. We do say spoilers. I mean, that's obviously before you even finish the game first, because there's Adam and Eve, isn't there?
Yeah.
In the game, that are kind of two, first playthrough bosses, I suppose?
Yeah, they are bosses. And it's like you said, the game layers on itself as you finish it. So their story gets told more and more as you go on through the separate endings as well.
Even though they're not, well, they are in it, but you've already dealt with them. It's one of those games that is very, even with a spoiler warning, it's kind of hard to totally spoil, isn't it? Whereby, you know, if you play it, you're just going to play something you've not experienced before, which is incredible in 2017.
Yeah, I mean, the way that they use, in-game concepts such as a menu, for example, is pretty brilliant. Like as you get hit, sometimes elements of your menu would fade away, or you're like, you're a robot and you can add more features onto yourself, which is pretty amazing, and people can exploit that. And it's really interesting what they do with sort of these concepts of UI, is a plugin chip, for example, and you can take away that plugin chip and just be faster if you want.
I hate the word meta, but is it kind of that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think so. Like the menu being part
of the gameplay.
The robotness of it.
Yeah, you're not just playing as the robot when you see the robot on the screen. You are the robot playing the robot.
Yeah.
It's
very smart.
In a way.
It's smart.
I do like how the UI looks like, those crap games you used to get in the early to mid 90s on an awful screen, the really cheap ones, 10, 15 quid. And they had the dark green background. I'm not talking about a Game Boy, dark green background. And they left after images behind them.
That's
the sort of vibe they're going for.
That little bit of screen burn left behind. Totally. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean.
Sure I do, but
when I turn off,
I only played good games.
You
so
what?
I didn't play any of these bad.
You haven't played, but
you've
been playing Zelda. We can talk about Zelda a little bit.
Shall we?
Yeah, of course we should.
Only a little bit.
Well, some of what I wanted to say just quickly though is obviously, Ataro Yoko. You asked him about the design of the main character, Saim, and he was just I like girls. And Persona 5, the thing that struck me, and I wrote about this, was the first time you meet Anne, she's being really, really perved on by a guy, but then you get to control her and she's wearing a fucking fetish outfit basically. And it's dude, how is this representative of how she feels? Do you think that's something that, I don't know, I hate to say it's part of weird Japan, but it is a bit of weird Japan, isn't it? There are cultural differences that play into this and how Japanese developers see women in games and how they want to present them on screen. Anne is really powerful, 2B is really powerful, but they're both kind of presented as these sex objects.
I don't know. It's disappointing to see, because it's a culture, it is a cultural thing, and it's a widespread thing. It's not just Japanese games that have this issue. It's a lot, loads of games have this issue, and that's not an excuse at all. It's just disappointing to see in a game like Nier or Persona, where it's dealing with heavy themes with tact, and yet goes out and does that as well.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, we mentioned Bayonetta in relation to Nier earlier, and it was one that I struggled with, like when I first saw Nier and I saw Yogatara being like, I like girls, here's her bum. And I was like, oh, I feel uncomfortable about this, but I'm not sure why yet. So I'm going to try and step back and think about it. And I think the reason why I enjoy the sexuality of Bayonetta is because she's very clearly in control of it. Even though she's not real, her sexuality is part of her powerfulness because she's aware of it. She's in control of it. It's all kind of like cool. It's part of her. But then with 2B, it's almost like she's not aware of it. She's not a very emotional person.
Well, she's manufactured, isn't she?
Yeah. So it's something that she's not really in control of. It's just something that she happens to be. And because she's this sort of android character, she's getting on with what she has to do and not really thinking about the fact that her bum's showing. She doesn't really seem to care. Whereas if it was something that she owned in the way that Bayonetta did, it would feel more part of her character, part of her power, but it's not.
I suppose no one in Nier ever like leches onto 2B though, do they? Or do they?
No, but the idea that the player is that it's like, oh, I've made this fun game for you, but hey, wink, wink, I know what you like. You like to have something to look at while you're playing a fun game. So it's a bum.
This happened in Persona 5 as well. It's interesting that you say that, Kate, because when Anne gets her red leather outfit, she doesn't have any say in getting the outfit. It's literally put upon her, and there's this like short scene of the guys just gawking at her.
Yeah.
And this happens in Persona more often than like you think. Like it happens like in so many cutscenes with so many different scenes. Like that, so we just went to the beach, and the beach scene was of course full of that. And you know, they were like driving away in a car, and you know, there was that in there. It just feels like shoehorned in most weird, unnecessary places, and it grinds my gears so much.
I mean, Persona 4 had a bit on both sides of it where there's this bathhouse scene, and there's a really uncomfortable bit where there's this girl who likes to dress more androgynously, but then once they go to the bathhouse, they kind of force her into playing the sort of more feminine role that she's clearly uncomfortable with. And all the girls are like, oh my God, you're so cute. And she's like blushing, and you're supposed to take it as, oh, secretly she wants to wear a bikini. And I was like, oh no, I don't like this.
There's a whole thing about like the boys seeing her bust as well.
And they go on about the boobs all the time. And it's, but then at the same time, you can also make the boys wear towels for like all the battles in the dungeons. And it's not quite the same, but it's almost as if it's trying to cater to different people.
I mean,
almost.
I made my dude in Persona wear a towel in many dungeons. Yeah.
They're very cute when they wear the little towels.
My little man was. He was my little man.
oh, dear.
Didn't realize the towels were that short.
Nier
has...
Well, I say sold, quote unquote, sold a million copies now. And apparently they're, well, you know, that's, you know, sent out a million copies or whatever. There are a million copies in shops, or shipped is the right word exactly. I've got to be careful what I say, because shipping can mean something else.
Oh, yes.
Is what Waypoint has taught me over the years. Yeah. But apparently they're repressing copies of the original Nier on PS3, which I think is remarkable. I mean, this could be a real moment, couldn't it, for kind of weird, previously only considered cult-level Japanese games, couldn't it?
So it's kind of amazing, because I picked my copy of Nier up from somewhere for $7.99 brand new when it was completely shadowed. And it came out of the blue. So I think it's great that they're reprinting these games, and I think it's something that Sega should look at for Yakuza. Like 3 and 4, now that 0 and 1 are doing so well.
Very good point, yeah. Very good point.
But yeah, I think it's a good trend. Like, I'd love to play Resonance of Fate again.
is that not backwards compatible on things? I don't know.
I don't know why you're looking at me. I've never heard of it.
Saim's just made a face that is just telling me, don't be ridiculous. I remember seeing Resonance of Fate, like you're saying, for about £8 in a local shop before that local shop closed down, presumably because it couldn't shift its one copy of Resonance of Fate. But I do feel bad for never buying it.
That's probably why.
Yeah. I mean, that's all they had in the end. They sold all their copies of Dark Souls. I did buy my copy of Dark Souls in there, and I've still never really played it, but that's a whole other podcast. Dark Souls, I mean, that's a game. That's definitely a game. Zelda Breath of the Wild is a bit like Zelda. You know, Dark Souls, like Dark Studio Ghibli did it, isn't it?
No.
What?
No.
I Zelda just wanted to get that in there hard. Because like, if nothing else, that leads to people on the Twitter going, no, it's not like Dark Souls at all.
And then they'll talk to you and you won't feel lonely anymore.
I mean, it's like Dark Souls in as much as weapons break and it can be quite hard in places, but I mean, that's it.
I honestly,
I'm not actually saying it's like Dark Souls, by the way. I just want to retract that for the record.
It's not like Dark Souls. It's more like what else would piss people off?
It's more like The Witcher, but Studio Ghibli.
It is actually a lot like The Witcher, though. Like,
but without unicorn sex. So far.
Well, I've just seen a cutscene. I haven't. I wish. Oh boy. God. It's a lot like The Witcher. I was thinking about this today when I first played the demo, which was nearly a year ago now. Which is the only demo they ever had. I hated it.
You didn't like Zelda.
Because it starts off in the Great Plateau, which is the most boring bit of the game. Yeah.
Wait, man. There's like a big rock monster there.
Yeah, but you only play 20 minutes of the intro. So you wake up, you climb out, an old man goes, you're naked. And you go, oh, whoops. Yes, sorry.
So I am.
And then you unlock the first tower and you don't even have time to get the sailcloth. The sailcloth is 90% of that game.
My 3-year-old calls it the parachute. So I'm just going with the parachute. It's not a parachute.
No, but, well, it works as
he calls it the parachute.
But like,
it's a glider.
I don't know. The game is really good at enabling you to do things. That's what's so good about it. It's even better than The Witcher in that regard, because The Witcher's pretty limited. You've got 5 spells and they don't really do anything except in specific places. It's not gone.
Well, you totally do level them up and they change.
You do, but they're only good in combat or for like blowing apart piles of bricks every now and again.
Shanky wooden doors, yeah.
Yeah, like shanky? Lighting torch. Shonky.
Shonky.
That's what we always use at Future. It's a very future
dodgy word. Wooden doors.
But like, it's not physics enabled in the way that Zelda is, where every puzzle can be solved roughly 5 to 10 different ways. Every boss can be taken out with a different weapon. Just depends what you have on you at that point. Yeah. If you want, you can learn to parry and block, but I didn't.
You don't need to.
And it didn't matter. Like the fights might be longer and not as, you know, good, but you're still having a great time. You're summoning ice pillars and you're flying up into the air with your magical powers. And God, I love that game.
It's good. It's good, isn't it?
That's quite the turnaround from a position of I'm not really into Zelda to buying a Switch just to play Zelda.
Like, they kept pitching it, not explicitly, but suggestively, as, you know, Skyrim meets The Witcher. They were saying it's 6 times the size of Skyrim, and you'd go, okay, so you want us to think of Skyrim. And then it would be talking about quests in this very Witcher sort of way, and you'd be like, okay, it's it's Skyrim meets The Witcher. But I felt like it was the worst parts of those. Like, just because a game is huge doesn't mean it's good. So I thought, okay, well, if it's however big more than Skyrim is, then it's just going to be empty space. And a lot of it is empty space, especially the Great Plateau. There's not much to do in it. There's only 4 shrines in that area.
3.
4.
4?
4.
3.
You've got to get all the powers.
Is there
bomb
3 or 4?
Stasis, Cryonis, and Magnesis. That's 4.
Oh, I don't remember. It was a long time ago. It was a long time ago. Yeah.
It's ancient history now.
It does feel like ancient history, and neither of us have finished it. Are you playing it, Saim, as well?
Yeah, I've put about 40 hours into it.
So if you add our hours up on that game, I mean, that's a lot, and none of us have finished it.
I don't want
I'm
to
about
finish
85
it.
In.
I'm not interested in finishing it. I don't want to go and fight Ganon in the big scary castle.
I wrote a thing
I'm
the
busy.
Other day about like how I'm genuinely quite anxious about being at the end of this game, because I don't want to be at the end of this game.
Yeah, well, same. I watched my house friend, I don't know what to call someone I'm sleeping on their sofa friend. And I watched him play.
Yeah, housemate is fine.
Like probably 40 hours and he's played maybe more like 80 in total. But then he finished it. He said, okay, today I'm going to finish it. Faffed around with side quests and then finished it. But now he's been watching me play it. And I am the kind of person who wants to discover every single secret. Not the things, not the Korok seeds, not all the shrines, but the secrets, the little side quests, the story-based stuff. That's what I want to find. And he's been watching me do that and been like, oh, I missed this. Oh, I missed that. I don't even know what this is. And I'm like, heh, heh, heh. I win.
Well, it's a different journey for everyone, isn't it? And that's what's so wonderful about it. Unlike, in a way, Persona 5, which does funnel you this way.
Mm.
The brilliance of Zelda, which is also the obstacle you've got to get over at the start, is this, you can go anywhere now if you want.
Yeah.
Which is daunting.
So I've heard a lot about a camera and something to do with memories, but I don't know what they are. And
yeah, a lot of people have said this. They're like, wait, what are memories? And you're like, you haven't got that. That's the story.
I've done all but one of the memories.
Okay, I've got about four or five to go, I think.
I know where the last one is. Yeah. I'm pretty sure I know where it is. Because it's the one part of the map I've not explored yet.
I unlocked all the map because I was like, you know what? It's way too much hassle to not know where everything is. So I've unlocked the entire map. I haven't done everything yet.
You got to hit those towers.
I've almost got all the recipes.
Ubisoft. So I haven't tracked any recipes. That's bad, isn't it?
You can't. Like, there's no recipe book.
Can you not save the recipes? If you make a dish, you can like check recipe, right? Does it not save it?
Yeah, you can, but it doesn't save it into kind of repository, so you can check back later. And it doesn't like tick off a recipe for you. Yeah. So there's no like reward for
doing. But you have to make stuff for certain people. So
yes.
The cooking in Zelda is incredible.
It is.
I'm a big, big fan of the
cooking. It's a very Minecraft style of cooking where it's like one wheat, one sugar, one egg, you've made a cake. And I'm like, did I?
It took me about until hour 75 before I made my first cake.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God, I've branched out into sweets.
There's something really exciting when you realize that beyond the very boring, simple, like steamed fruits, seared meat, you can actually
rice balls.
What's the thing I made? Creamy soup. It's got a big pink heart floating in it.
I made like electric milk. That was my favorite thing. Ooh. Really simple.
Yeah.
Just milk that gives you electric protection.
Nice. And like I made apple pie at one point.
Oh, apple pies. Yeah.
Easy.
Flaky crust apple pie.
My fruity, spicy pepper meat combo is looking ever so
awful.
I didn't know you could do that at all. I thought it was like, oh, kill a wolf and meet it.
Don't kill the wolves.
It sort of feels like discovering civilization. You start off the game and you're like, baked apples and you got to cook the meat. And then once you get more ingredients, you're like, I'm going to make a crepe.
There is an NPC in the game, though, who loves baked apples.
Really?
And she will pay you for those baked apples.
I haven't found her yet.
Yeah, she's in the Rito Village, spoiler.
I've pretty much spent all my money on all the good things. I found every fairy fountain.
What, did you even unlock the 10,000 rupee one?
Yeah, I did that today.
I haven't done that yet.
I've got loads of money.
But what does the 10,000 rupee fairy fountain do for you?
They all upgrade your armor.
I know that.
She upgrades it.
She just makes it even better.
Yeah, so you've got to get some real rare ingredients to make her happy. But I've heard that if you do get all the ingredients to upgrade something that many levels, she's got a really good animation where she gives you a big old smooch.
You see, she's been doing that a little bit, and my three-year-old was like, why are they kissing you?
Because they're your big auntie.
Just massive fairies, what?
It's definitely a sexy thing, like
this
Link lady.
Is quite sexy anyway.
Oh my God, he's got a permanent blush. He's so cute.
I feel the same, and I might be a little bit like I can't really appreciate him on the same scale.
Well, I don't need to share. I unlocked the rubber armor today.
Which armor?
Rubber armor.
Oh, yes.
It's
properly bondage kit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It's all black and it's got all these like straps on it. No, I didn't.
Oh, yeah. Well, if you haven't got all of the rubber armor outfit, then if you go to Tarrytown, then there's a guy there who will sell you the complete outfit.
Oh, well, I just got it all for free.
He knows what's up.
He does. He's like,
the glow-in-the-dark one.
I like that one too. I dyed it brown because it's got like little pink bones.
Yeah.
It's really cute.
Pink and brown.
Did you know if you upgrade the bone armor a couple of times, then when the skeletons come out of the ground at nighttime, they become your friends.
This is good.
Oh my God.
This is why I love Kilton so much. Kilton in the game where you get the monster mask and then Bokoblin or whatever is going to come
who
up to you.
This?
And you just jump around and they start jumping around with you.
Yeah. Like they go up to you and you're like, who are you? And you're like, I'm a lizard. And they're like,
And you do little jumps and they jump with you.
And he makes like a little noise. When you put the little Bokoblin or the Lizalfos mask on,
when
he starts making adorable noises. I got the Lionel mask yesterday.
Yes, I saw it.
I fought a Lionel and I went right up to him and he was like, hello.
Because Kilton, by the way, I did say spoilers.
Yeah.
Kilton is a cool monster dude who you kind of unlock him, don't you?
You have to go to a lake to find
him. You find him.
Yeah.
He's in Skull Lake. Spoiler. But you can find him there. And he like exchanges monster parts for Mon.
Yeah.
Which is like his own currency.
Yeah.
And then you can buy all these monster masks and like monster armor for your horse and Dark Link clothing.
I haven't got that one yet because I've only seen him twice.
Oh yeah.
I'm so
excited. I've got the Dark Link legs and top, but not the hood yet because it's expensive. I can't quite afford it yet. Yeah. But like, it means that Link walks around basically in this kind of like your classic green getup, but it's like tainted.
Oh,
it's like all dark. Good. And then his hood, like, he has glowing red eyes.
Oh my God, oh my God, oh my
so
God.
So I'm so working
towards
it.
I'm getting that.
Oh God.
Oh my God.
No, my dude is he's just rolling around in that like starter, like plate armor set with a bandana on.
Boo.
Oh, but that plate armor set can be really enhanced though. Like,
oh
that,
yeah, that's why I wear when I'm fighting stuff.
Yeah.
But I just got the barbarian outfit, which is a topless Link with paint all over him.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wait. And a skull on his head.
Kate, how do I get this, Kate?
They're all in shrines. You've just got to do specific shrines.
But again, if you unlock Tarrytown, I think that guy there will sell you barbarian armor.
Okay.
I think.
Oh, well.
He will sell you the Hyrulean shield or the Hylian shield as well if you've already have you found the Hylian shield?
No, I haven't.
Get that. It's like 90 defense.
What? I've got like 5 knight shields, which are all 40.
Nah, they're 40, mate. You want to get a Hylian shield.
40's nothing.
Ah, well.
I ventured into Hyrule Castle.
That's where you get the shield. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
If you go around the back.
Yeah.
Am I going to spoil this for everyone?
Yeah.
Maybe not. Maybe so. If you go around, so on the north bank of the castle, so you're looking over the castle, sort of northwest-ish. I did this completely by chance. I should stress, totally by chance. You can see like an opening.
Mm. Someone told me about that in the game.
Yeah, there's an opening. I think there are other ways to get to it, like through the castle, blowing up walls and stuff. But there's just a way in to like the dungeons. Uh-huh. And you go in there and there's like a big skeletal boss who... you know, you can take down quite easily, just shoot his eye out and beat the shit out of it.
All right.
And then he drops the best shield in the game.
Right.
Go and get that. Go and get that.
I accidentally fought two bosses this morning, or maybe yesterday evening. I was in the desert looking for one of the fairy fountains.
Oh, did you do the big monster in the desert?
And I did this big sort of sand whale thing.
Yeah.
So I got a bunch of bomb arrows.
That's a band.
I stood on top of a pillar and I just like fired bomb arrows at him. And it was expensive, but I didn't even need to hit him.
But that's important because that's a side quest.
Yes. Someone was like, my husband's dying. And I was like, oh, that's really sad. This is going to be 30 hours before I get to this. I hope he's all right.
Here's the guts of this monster. I haven't beaten that monster yet.
But you also use it to upgrade some of your armor. So I kind of don't want to give it to her. Yeah.
Your husband can die so I can make myself stronger.
He's not going to die.
Side quests in this game are all real dark, aren't they?
There are some really dark moments.
Are you going to talk about that one that I have?
The sad shrine.
The sad shrine.
The saddest shrine. Right, so Kakariko Village, right?
Yeah.
Which is one of the first bits you get to in Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
Has one shrine on the way to the fairy fountain that everyone unlocks. It has a secret shrine.
I'm going
to
find it.
A secret shrine, which you get by doing a few little side quests in there, and then you realize that the heirloom that's in
the
big main hut, the big ball.
Which I'm trying to figure out how to get the ball.
Obviously unlock something. That gets stolen. Anyway.
Oh.
So you hear rumors of people, you know, being a bit shifty or no one would steal that, you know, they wouldn't be able to just come in. Anyway, you find the person who is involved with this just by waiting outside. I can't remember... Impa's sort of house. You wait there for a while and someone just one of the two guards basically walks away. Anyway, you find out that he's a former member of the he's a former member of the Yiga clan, right? Who, you know, want to kill Link and stuff, but he left. Now he's been working or like he's being blackmailed basically, but to keep his kids safe, he's been doing stuff for the Yiga clan, and that involves stealing this heirloom. But you find out if you've been speaking to NPCs in that village beforehand, you'll see some kids running around. They're talking about like waiting for their mum to come home and stuff. Turns out that, you know, they're this guy's kids and his wife was killed for him leaving the Yiga clan. And it's just like, Jesus, Zelda got dark.
How'd you get the ball?
How'd you get the ball?
I want to get the ball.
You meet one of the, I can't remember what they're technically called in the game, but like one of those big Yiga guys shows up with like a wind blade.
So do I just have to wait for him to turn
you,
up?
No. You follow the guy from Kakariko Village and he walks up kind of past the fairy fountain. And I know that because the music started playing just after the fight. So it's quite near there. The shrine ends up, it's a shrine quest, obviously. But yeah, there's this whole there's so much dark, like you said, like it takes some real dark turns.
I got a really nice story today that I wasn't expecting. When you mentioned Tarrytown earlier, I've been slowly building up Tarrytown. If you haven't figured out Tarrytown yet, buy the house in Hateno Village.
Get the village. House.
And it'll start wiggling that quest out. And anyway, so I was building it up, and you get a Gerudo lady comes to set up shop, and she's like, "I'm so lonely. I can't find a man who will love me." And you go, okay, sure, whatever, bye. And the next time you come back, the guy who's running the town goes, guess what? We got engaged. And you're like, okay? Because he's this tiny little man with terrible hair.
It's Hudson, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he gets engaged to this Gerudo lady. And she's like, it's so romantic. And suddenly I realized that way near the start of the game, I was in the Zora area, and this guy just randomly was like, if you know any people getting engaged, you should tell me. And
priest.
I was like, I'm never going to remember to do that. That sounds really specific. But really, I remembered. And so I went to find him, and he was like, okay, I'm going to do this. I'm going to go and make them get married. I haven't checked up on them yet, but that's going to be very sweet.
That and so it proves. Yay. To be sweet. It's about time we discuss some questions.
Yes.
I've got loads more to talk about. I wanted to talk about Resi 7, Yakuza 0. Basically, we can summarize both of those by saying they're good games.
Good games.
Good game.
They're good games. Yakuza 0 is a great game. Jump into that. Doesn't matter if you played one before. Resi 7 doesn't matter if you played one before.
Yeah.
They're both really good starting
points.
They're
all right.
A few questions to go through. This is mostly Persona focused, actually. Mm. A chap called Matthew Williams on Twitter messaged to say, people have been saying that Persona 5 has some bad or weird translations. Thoughts? Yeah. Now, of course, none of us speak Japanese.
You don't know that?
Well, I'm pretty sure we don't. Now, I will say from my perspective that a lot of the dialogue in Persona 5 is actually really good. Like through the instant messaging, the way they talk to each other. I really like the localization of it actually, but I have no idea what the original Japanese is like. So I don't know. Have either of you heard this?
What they're complaining about really is the way that sentences are sometimes structured. Right. So like a character will say, oh no, I cannot believe that the big great evil man can be over there at this point in time. Can you believe it? And that can be localized in like a really nice way. And it rears its head every now and again, but I don't really care. So
no, I've really enjoyed some of the way they talk to one another. And even like on the loading screens where they have the fan site, PHAN, and you see the little messages left there. And they do read like people, like the kind of comments people would leave on YouTube or whatever, you know, that they genuinely do from an English perspective. I think they've done a good job. I know that, you know, Final Fantasy 15's had some criticism for its localization though. Don't know, maybe that's a bad example, but I don't want to go down that rabbit hole.
Mm. All I know in Final Fantasy 15 is that they call something, I think, eggy in a basket.
Eggy in a basket.
Eggs in a basket.
It might, yeah. Okay, so, and I was like, I've never heard of that. So I looked it up and it's not a thing in the UK. And that made me sad.
We get chicken in a basket. There was sausage in a basket.
That's not what egg in a basket is.
Egg in a basket
is where you cut a hole in some bread and you put an egg in it. But apparently that's got a really stupid name in England and I can't remember what it is. It's called like eggy in the toast hole or something. I don't know.
Just stick an egg in it, love.
Yeah, just put an egg in the hole.
Is it like how when you eat a boiled egg and you do like slice some toast into little strips and call them soldiers?
They're not really soldiers.
That's a dippy egg.
That is a dippy egg. Yeah.
They're soldiers.
I would call that a dippy egg and soldiers.
Soft boiled egg and soldiers.
Dippy egg.
Yeah,
or like eggy bread instead of French toast. I just like saying stupid things about eggs. Oh. Dippy eggy.
Eggs are good. Eggs are a good ingredient in Zelda as well.
I like eggs.
These are all excellent games that we're talking about.
Go
I'm never going to be asked on again after that.
No.
Of course, there are eggs in Splatoon 2, as well as we saw in the Nintendo Direct recently.
Freelance for golden eggs. Why did they keep going on about freelancing? I don't really understand that.
I think it's a localization issue, Kate.
But they kept saying it. That Nintendo Direct was rubbish, by the way. They went on about ARMS for like half an hour.
Yeah.
Have you heard of ARMS? Yes, please stop
talking. We've played it. Yeah, ARMS is
I've played
a game
all I'm ever going to play of ARMS.
Yeah, I'm not so sure about
Sorry.
ARMS. Will Potter on Twitter, this is good, obviously. One piece of advice you would give to anyone starting Persona 5.
Don't
say that. It's good.
Ditch your girlfriend. Because she's not going to get any of your time. I don't know. Don't.
Or boyfriend.
I'm sorry. No, Will's got a girlfriend, I think.
Will has a lovely girlfriend.
Oh, do you know Will Potter?
Yes.
Is he a friend of the show in a
round? Don't actually ditch your girlfriend.
Will. Oh, do
sorry.
You? Oh, look at me. I'm the last one to know this buddy chum situation. Go on then. Someone tell bloody Will, who is probably just tweeting in for a joke then, what a piece of advice he needs to know.
Well, just sit down, make sure you've got lots of time because you won't do anything else.
Make yourself a cup of tea because you'll be in there a while. Two cups of tea. And biscuits. Please don't ditch your girlfriend. I'm sorry I said that.
Does Will have a girlfriend who should now be worried?
No,
he doesn't have a girlfriend or no, she shouldn't be worried?
I don't know anymore, Mike. Everyone's nice and everyone should enjoy Persona and maybe eat an eggy in a basket.
An egg in bread.
Eggy bread.
Tom Laurie emailed our Waypoint account, our gamingadvice.com account, and he says that 40 hours into Persona 5, he's not liking it very much because it's full of so many shitty boys.
Let me introduce you to a thing called Twitter.
But that's mic not his drop. Question. Don't drop these mics, they're worth more than my job is. He says, like, have any of us ever kind of pushed ourselves to try and enjoy something because lots of other people are enjoying it? So in a roundabout way, this is like, have any of us not got along with something that's quite popular? And this is quite good because I mentioned I listened to the latest video gamer podcast earlier on. They were talking about stuff they just couldn't get into. And I think Alice on that podcast said she's never got into The Witcher. Someone else said they've never been into Zelda. Like, I mean, are there things between the two of you that you know to be good because other people have said like, guys, this is a great game, but you've just gone either bounced off it or just never been interested? Good answer.
Dark Souls isn't for me, but that's not because it's bad. It's just because I don't like all the things it does well. Like, even if it does them well, I don't want to do them.
Are you scared of it?
No, I'm just bored by combat. I'm just bored by it. I've never enjoyed a platformer, really.
Never enjoyed a platformer?
I'm pretty sure we've done this before. I don't like platformers.
Okay.
Yes. I know.
I mean, this is the...
I've never played Metroid and I don't really want to.
Well, any Metroid?
Any Metroid ever.
But why don't you want to?
Just don't want to shoot.
If
aliens.
A new Metroid came out for the Switch and everyone was like, this is an amazing Metroid, a bit like Yakuza 0, a bit it's like a Nier platformer. Automata, you don't need to know anything about previous games. Would you have a look?
It's a platformer, Mike. I don't
know. No, but Metroid Prime isn't a platformer.
I wouldn't know. Is there kissing in Metroid? No. Does she get to kiss the little Metroid? Did they go, mwah, mwah, mwah? No.
Well, they kind of try and kiss Not you after really. A fashion.
No. Is there story? Probably, but I'm not interested
there
in
is,
it.
There is, yeah.
I know there's a brain.
There's a big there brain.
Are, there are
a
some,
big mummy brain.
Some Metroids, and one of them is a Prime.
There is a Prime involved.
There's a Prime.
That's description.
That's all official. I need to know about Metroid.
Well, that shit's on Wikipedia, Kate.
Was it here that I tried to describe the plot of Die Hard based on what I'd heard?
We've sat in this room and talked about Die Hard before, but yeah. I know you also talked to Chris Scullion recently about Die Hard.
So everything I know about Die Hard is there's a building, maybe it blows up. Alan Rickman is potentially German and at some point someone gets a machine gun.
Not, well,
I've never seen Die Hard, so I wouldn't know, Kate.
Oh, God, don't. Like, don't I can't have the two people in the world who've never seen Die Hard on the same podcast. But I mean, Sam, have you ever like found yourself just really trying to like a game that you know in your heart of hearts is probably a really good game, but you just can't crack the whatever code is necessary to enjoy it?
Like any of the new sort of Batman games that came out, I'm just
the
like
Rocksteady's, yeah.
Yeah, I was like, I do not care about this at all. Like, I fail to understand how this is appealing to anyone in any form.
That's fair enough. I mean, I'm Deus Ex. Yeah. No, I know the more recent one didn't get a great reception, but I really tried with what was it? Human Revolution, is it?
Human. No, you're right. The first time was Mankind
Divided was the most recent one, but there was one before that.
And yeah, that was Human Revolution. Yeah, something
the
like one that. With all the yellow. That's all.
Yeah,
often,
all the yellow. I just bounced off that so many times. Yeah. There's probably more besides that, but I don't want to go down that horrible hole. Alexander. Oh my goodness. Skogheim, I'm so sorry if that's not your name, Alexander. Skogheim, he says that Persona 5 and Yakuza 0, they both handle mundane stuff really well. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff to do that is outside of the kind of main quote-unquote questing. You know, Yakuza, you're going to go and eat some delicious ramen, do some karaoke, do some bowling.
Do some Yakuza.
Do some Yakuza-ing. Yakuza. Persona 5, much the same. You're going to go wash your clothes or, you know, go and see a questionable doctor to get some meds.
Is this a sexy doctor?
She is quite a sexy
doctor.
She's
like, I'm going to do the experiments on you. And you're like, oh, okay.
Can we all agree that she is a bit sexy?
I haven't seen her.
She is a bit sexy.
I'm imagining her.
She calls you my little guinea pig.
That's creepy. That's not sexy. I don't like that.
I would be up. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
Whoa.
He asks, so Alexander asks, you know, would it be interesting to see more Western devs do this in their kind of RPGs? You know, there isn't much mundane downtime, for instance, in Horizon Zero Dawn. As good as that game is, it is pretty much everything is really essential. You must do this now. Someone's life depends on it.
But I have to say that BioWare games are good at it, but it doesn't happen often enough. Like, I'm thinking Dragon Age Inquisition, not really Mass Effect, where it's like, you've just had this huge battle, and every time you finish a big quest in a big area, you usually go back to your home base, and then it'll sort of usually trigger a cutscene where it's just a nice chat with someone. And I'd like to see more of that because I like it when you have a nice chat with someone and maybe you have a beer or cook an apple pie, and it's like, aw.
Like some of the nicest moments of Persona 4 were just where you're hanging out eating noodles with Chie or just, you know, with Yusuke just being idiots.
Being teenagers.
Yeah, being kids, which is obviously something I can barely remember.
I think Western devs really like the idea of like, you're the hero and you don't have time for any of this. You've got to go and save the world. And it's like, sometimes I need to eat, not just to regain health.
Yeah.
That would be nice.
Yes, eating as a social, like, you know, growing the bonds. I suppose that's what they do better in, I don't even say better. You know what I mean? Yakuza and Persona particularly, you know, you are encouraged to form these bonds with other characters, which maybe doesn't exist in many Western RPGs so much. I mean, obviously Mass Effect kind of lives and dies on the bond, on the relationships you form with your crewmates, but it's usually by doing one very particular thing with them rather than building.
You bought me a packet of fruit pastels. Now I am your best friend.
That's exactly what the Krogans, they love fruit pastels, the Krogans.
Since
the genophage, that's all they've been into. Delicious fruity. It's the gelatin in the fruit pastels. They love it. It gets them horny.
Lore? I don't
think is that how the Krogans save their race?
Just loads and loads of round trees.
Stop.
Only pastels.
Are you being
though,
paid for
not,
this?
Not fruit gums. Because fruit gums are quite hard. And you look at their mouths, right? The Krogan mouth is pretty big, right? But they're kind of like potential for chewing. I'm guessing they swallow a lot of their food whole. They don't seem to have much jaw mobility.
I've never thought about it.
I know, they're all quite lippy. So
they're very lippy.
They could suck a fruit pastel.
I don't know, do they have molars?
Probably
do they
not.
Have grinding teeth? I mean, they basically
I'm thinking of like a turtle's mouth. So how does a turtle eat?
Well, it kind of snaps and swallows.
They like eating smushy things like tomatoes and grapes and stuff. So maybe Krogans have grapes.
I've never seen a Krogan eat.
Well, that's because it's hard to animate. Someone genuinely sent me a DM the other day, like, why isn't there much like hugging in games? And I was like, it's hard to animate.
It's really hard to put two independent limbed objects against each other.
Someone's been reading my unpublished column, haven't they? Is it
Mate,
you?
I didn't only read it. I didn't only read it. I like totally put extra words in it. That's what
Mike,
do.
No. What have you done?
I just you know, you put done? Some disclaimers in there saying that this
is. No. I mean, I guess a bit sexy towards the end where I sort of got carried away with describing kissing. And then I was like, oh,
yeah, maybe
no.
I calmed that down a bit.
Did you?
Yeah, maybe I did. I mean, if we ever read that out on air, this would be a total iTunes content warning
now.
Situation. Did anyone I kind of want to wrap this, but I want to give it just a second. Thank you for your questions, by the way. Please do send us more questions for further future Waypoint UK podcasts. The next one's going to be a bit of a horror-y theme. Kate will be back for it. She hates horror games. So that'll be good.
Great.
You won't have played any of them. That'll be fine. And Pete Donaldson's going back on. That's
he likes
to
football.
He does like football. He does like video games as well.
He also does, yes.
And we did the slushy, mushy, romantic
he's
one.
He's knowledgeable about many
he
things.
He is very knowledgeable.
At least two.
In fact, he loves his Yakuza games as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, obviously there were other well-received Japanese games that have been out so far this year. Did you play any of Neo, Saeem? I bet you did.
Yeah, I did. I reviewed that game. It's a good game. Yeah.
You don't sound like
that.
You mean
didn't
that.
Sound too positive, though.
It's because it's really long, and I want to finish it, but it's like 100 hours long, and I just don't have that time in my life anymore.
Yeah,
he says it's 80 hours into Persona 5
because of Persona 5.
Right? Yeah, yeah. And of course, we're talking a few days after Bayonetta, which we mentioned earlier on, has come out for PC. I mean, basically, if you've not played that game before, you kind of have to play that
play
game,
it.
Right? Can we all say that?
Also, the Amiibos is the Amiibi.
Oh, Bayonetta Amiibo.
Oh my God. When that came out, I was not fussed about that direct, but then they showed Bayonetta Amiibo and I was like, legs!
You can keep
I
your
yelled
squid.
Legs.
I'm having a lady whose G-string is made from her own hair.
Well, yours not.
Well, it is, isn't it?
Well.
Is that a consequence of long hair or I don't know.
Oh,
where
let's does that not start? Get into it. Blah. Anyway, I might get the Amiibo. I like her legs. She's got good legs.
She does have good legs.
Yeah.
Where can listeners find you online, Saeem Ahmed? Where could they follow you for hot takes on the latest game releases?
I do relatively warm takes on a lot of games. My Twitter account, which is at Saeem AHMD, because some guy took Ahmed.
I hate that guy.
Yeah.
Armed Saeem Ahmed. And dangerous.
Armed and dangerous. Yeah, that's me.
What's your Skype account that I'm calling you on now, Saeem?
It's Saeem.
No, we shouldn't say that because people will try and find you on Skype.
I don't really care.
It's a cool thing though. I like that. Like you were saying, it's like, you know, we were all young once.
Do you want to know what my email address is? I don't use it anymore. I don't mind.
Oh, is it an old email address?
It's an old email address.
What was your old email
address?
You can
probably still email on me on it, but don't. It's just embarrassing. I don't know. Okay, right. It was peanut_bunny_fluff.
What?
I don't know.
That's the most on-brand thing you've
I was just going to say it was
peanut
on-brand.
Bunny fluff.
Peanut bunny fluff. Peanut was my nickname because KT, KP, KP peanuts.
No.
Bunnies, I like them. Fluff is good.
It's
I don't know.
Something that builds up in your belly button when you get to a certain age.
Sure does.
It peanut bloody belly well does,
fluff.
Doesn't it?
That's my old person.
Good grief.
Email address.
But on Twitter, Kate, where can people find you now that they know where to find Saeem?
I'm at How Not To Draw. I'm that on most things if you want to follow me on Instagram, which I'm sure you do.
This is true. And Waypoint is at Waypoint on Twitter. We are Vice Waypoint on Facebook. We are vice.com Waypoint online. Please come and like us and follow us and all that good stuff. The next UK Waypoint podcast is on May the 4th. Like I just said previously, Kate and I will be joined by Pete Donaldson. We're going to be talking about
Star Wars. It's the 4th of May. May the 4th of May be with you.
Oh, crikey,
May the 4th
Riley.
Of May be with you.
Yeah. Mike.
Well, yeah. We'll mainly be talking about probably Prey and Alien.
Yeah.
What with.
I'll be at a party when that comes out. At a Star Wars party.
Don't break the illusion of us recording it when people are listening to it or like doing it live. Yes. So if you've any questions about sci-fi horror games, I guess send them over. Otherwise, be safe till then and we'll all speak then. We won't speak. It's a one-way system. bye, everyone. Thanks
bye.
For coming on.
Guests. Bye.
Ciao. God, I said ciao.
Ciao.
I feel so bad.
Man.
I'm just hope that the guy leaves this bit running as well so I can apologize for saying ciao. Bye.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.